Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Heather Parody. Heather is a wonderful, wonderful soul and a wonderful human being. She has an energy about her that radiates, and she herself is a podcaster and has a couple of different podcasts, Unconventional Leaders and NFT for Newbies. And this was such an incredible conversation because Heather has spent time to look internally, and she was able to bring forth that same introspection into this conversation. So this was a wide-ranging conversation about Heather's interests, how she raises children, what to do with technology with children, and how to become the highest version of yourself. I enjoyed this so much, but I would love to know your thoughts about this episode as well. And you can give me your feedback on it at Hey Danny Miranda. I thrive off your feedback. It is my oxygen. I love to hear the comments, the reviews come in, whatever it may be. When people let me know what they thought about any particular episode, it means the world to me. So if you have any thoughts about this one, drop me a line at Hey Danny Miranda. But until then, this is my conversation with Heather Parody.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Heather, thank you for coming on the podcast. I've dived into your story and I have so much I want to talk to you about. So I'm excited to press record and thankful for you being here.
I'm thankful for you, Danny. Thanks for reaching out. And I'm glad Twitter brought us together. Twitter's still alive and well, isn't it?
Yes, it is a beautiful, beautiful place. Let's start with you in 6th, 7th, or 8th grade. I'm not sure which. And you stop going to school. Break that down for us. Exactly how that happened.
Going to school. Yeah. So that's such a great leading question. I said, screw the system and ran away. No, I was homeschooled and my mom was dealing with a lot of mental health issues. And so our education stopped around that time as she was dealing with her own issues. And we tried to figure out, life on our own. We were kind of just some free-spirited kids who kind of just had a lot of time on their hands for the last half of my childhood, I guess.
What did you do exactly in that time?
Watched a lot of TV and ate a lot of junk food, as you can imagine. I remember at one point I started getting really interested in psychology. So I remember walking to the library and just going and getting some books on psychology, which were way above my reading level, but just brought them home. Just, I don't know why I did that. I started a lot of clubs, started a little business, and that's when I really got into running. I became a runner around that time too, just to kind of relieve my own stress and anxiety. But I was just a really kind of curious, creative person. But yeah, it seems like a million years ago.
What do you look back on that time period and think of, and how do you remember that time period? Is it fondly? Is there trauma that is associated with it, or is it just an exciting time you got to explore yourself? What is your thoughts around how you reflect upon that experience?
That's a great question. I don't know if I've ever even thought about that before. I think how unaware I was and how I didn't know that I had choices. I think that's the biggest thing that I kind of came out of that time period with is, you know, sometimes you grow up and you think, this is my path, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then one day you just wake up. I don't know if it's an age thing or an experience thing or what, but you realize like, no, really, you're not sitting passively in life. And going back to Carol Dweck's book, you know, the internal and external locus of control, of understanding that life isn't just happening to you, that there's a lot that you project out. And I think I was on such a conveyor belt of just, and I mean, that's part of being a kid, and then also to the environment I grew on, just riding the wave and experiencing life, that I just never really questioned or thought, that I could really do anything interesting. Like, that thought never even came to my mind. It's like, you live and you eat and you die. And it was just, I know this was really like dark, but that's kind of like the mindset that I had back then. Yeah.
When did you stop believing that?
Enter in personal development. I think personal development changed my life. And I know it gets a really bad rap because it does not have all of the answers by any means. And I think a lot of times it's put into this pretty little bow or step-by-step guideline. And that's not the way life is. It's messy and it's different and it's customizable to each person. But I will say that it was an entry point to saving my life, really, and my mindset and the direction that I was going. I remember at being about 22, 23, and I was dating this guy at the time. We didn't work out, but I'm really grateful because he said one of the most important questions that's ever been asked of me. He's like, I told him I want to help people one day. And he said, well, how are you going to do that? And I said, well, I'm just going to love them and help them. And I just really want to make a difference in this world. And he goes, well, Heather, you have to have a skill set in order to really help people. And I never really put those two and two together of, like, you know, your kindness and your generosity is one thing, but really being able to bring something to the table and sharpen it is another. And him saying that propelled me to go back to school and start learning and trying to figure out who I was. And around that time, I started digging into personal development and trying to better myself and get in shape and do all those things. You know, the rabbit hole we go down. And it was empowering, but it also, too, was, I guess, humbling and scary because you think, oh, wait, I can't blame a lot of other people. This really is in my court a lot more than what I've been told, right? You grow up in kind of a lower income society or certain, you know, areas in the world, and it's no one's fault, but it's just like kind of the mindset there that this is the way things are. And these are the cards that have been dealt with you for you. And challenging that, again, is liberating, but it's also like, oh, dang it. That means I've got a lot of work to do.
Because all of a sudden now, responsibility.
Sure.
Something that was outside of your control. You said, oh, that's not something I need to worry about. The path I'm on is just the path that I'm going to be on. And now You're like, oh, wow, I have responsibility for my actions, I have responsibility for where I end up, and now it's on me. So it's a different way of framing the world that all of a sudden is liberating on one sense and also very scary, like you said, in another, because you now have to do it yourself and you see that the work falls on you. So,
yeah, and I don't think that's a one-time event. You know, that's something that if we're really in the game, that we're constantly revisiting and being honest with ourselves about. I mean, just this morning, I'm reading a book, Andy Storch. He wrote this book called, like, about not drifting, and journaling this morning about how in my life right now am I still drifting and getting away from vision and not taking responsibility and not taking real ownership of what's going on in my day and all of that. And I'm, you know, several years now into doing my own thing and personal development and all this stuff. And it's still like we're kind of catch ourselves from drifting. I mean, Napoleon Hill talks about that. Think and Grow Rich. Fantastic. Not Think and Grow Rich. What's the other book you wrote?
Outwitting the Devil.
Outwitting the Devil, right? We live in this state of just drift, you know, and we have to be disciplined enough to catch ourselves doing that.
So you mentioned journaling to yourself, and I'm so happy you brought it up because I want to talk to you about the regular meetings you have with yourself.
How do you find out all this stuff? This is like so creepy. You know so much about me. We just met. Good researcher.
Thank you. It's really interesting because we put ourselves out there so much. We speak so often and we say it 1 second and it's gone the next. And then someone will bring it up 3 years later. It's like, oh, I said that? Like,
yeah, so, it's funny. So I got a DM from somebody the other day on Instagram, and they were like, because when I was a teenager, I did a bunch of stupid bets. And I guess I did a podcast episode on it because she was DMing me and just being like, hey, I'll pay you $50 to eat a goldfish. And I'm like, who are you? What? And I'm like, oh, yeah, like 3 years ago, I did a podcast on something stupid like that. Anyway, sorry, Danny. I'm ADD.
No. No need to apologize. It's interesting because we put ourselves out there. And so often when we're talking about in the personal development space, it's like, you know you're going to help people for generations and generations, but we don't often think about the random things we say. I think about this podcast helping my grandchildren's grandchildren potentially. And so
that's deep.
That's crazy to think about. So it also means that the bets we put out there or the random stuff we're maybe not so proud of are also out there as well. But to get us back to where we were originally, tell me about the regular meetings you have with yourself, when that started, what you do, and I think that would be really interesting.
Time with yourself is the best, the best. And I think our culture is set up right now to completely distract us away from true source and really getting to the place of knowing and groundedness, where a lot of the things that we're searching for externally are right here, and we're just freaking bonkers nuts and busy that we don't recognize it. And so it's hard for me. I'm a naturally kind of hyper, high energy ADD person, if you haven't caught it on by now, but it's been a practice to set time every day. If it's not every day, it's rare. I miss a day that I don't sit alone with myself, have personal development time, and just honestly sit and think. There's a really interesting practice right now that I've been playing with, and I've never really had terminology for it until recently. But Tom Bilyeu talks about a thinkitation, where you know you spend time in meditation and getting into a certain state, and then allow space for you to think critically, allow creativity to come in. And when your brain is at a certain a state, like a, I think it's an alpha brainwave state, that you're able to just kind of be a little bit more aware of like intuitive thought and things that are already there. So I think a daily practice of that, as heavy as it sounds, it's very simple. It's just a matter of space and quiet and maybe a journal and a pen. Every week I have a more, I guess, formal practice where I revisit vision. A lot of times our days are just filled. I don't know about you, have whiteboards, just stuff to do and calendars and your Asana and all this stuff. I'm like, we're productive, you know what I mean? But how often do we stop and return back to vision and being like, why am I calling Johnny on Tuesday at 9 p.m.? Why am I doing this podcast? Why am I doing this and that? Like, is this aligned with vision? Is this aligned with the vision that's evolving and changing and growing? Or are we just getting in a habit and a routine? And again, Danny, back to drifting, just this repetitive motion of busyness and overwhelm without stopping and just like catching ourselves and like, where are you right now? Are you aligned? Are you aligned with your calling right now? Are you really being true to your values? And we all struggle with that because we're humans, but there's an opportunity through meeting with yourself to revisit that and make some adjustments.
So that weekly practice, is that something that you have formal questions outlined for yourself? Is it written in a document? How do you go about that?
For me, I have my vision typed out on a Word doc, and I have like a long-term vision, and I have a kind of a vision for the year. And those are in my document. It says editable. I always get this word wrong. Edible? Not edible, like you eat it, but you can edit it. It's editable. You can edit it. That word, that one, that's an awesome word. I have that written down next to my vision because I'm constantly changing it and revising it and updating it. Sometimes you get down the road and you're like, I don't really like this, and it's okay to change. So usually I visit the big long-term vision and the vision for the year. And I look over my week and just ask myself what's worked, what hasn't, what am I avoiding? And a lot of the stuff that I'm avoiding, there's a reason for it. What is the thing that you're constantly pushing off on your to-do list? There's a reason for that, right? So it's just some of those honest questions. And I have never, ever, ever sat down with myself through my daily practice or my weekly practice and just left and been like, dude, I aced that. You know what I mean? Like, nothing to work on here. It's not a matter of beating yourself up like check marker X. It's a matter of just practicing awareness and realigning and making those micro adjustments just to get better and better and better, hopefully every single day.
How do you think about changing, and maybe not the vision as a whole, but I know you have a new podcast, NFT for Newbies, and it's so cool to see you enter into a new space. But how do you think about that in the context of your vision? Because I would bet that the NFT podcast wasn't something that was on your vision to start the year.
100%
so, not. So how do you think about the changing nature of what goes on and how that relates to your vision?
Excellent. Fantastic question. I think, I don't know, this is, I don't know the answer to this. It's hard because there's a natural, there's a side of like creativity and curiosity and kind of this intuitive approach that I'm really interested in of like, you know, following that. I think there's something to be said. But then also too, I think a lot of times people like me who are big visionaries and whatever, that we allow that to keep us from not being disciplined. And there's such a balance there between honoring those sparks of creativity, but also too being aware enough that are you chasing sparks and curiosity to avoid getting into the really hard work? Like my daughter's in karate, you know, and she's advancing into the advanced belts now. And now she's like, I think I want to switch to dance. And I'm like, I'm sure you do because this is getting hard. And is this an interest issue or is this a, I'm avoiding the hard stuff because that hard stuff is going to come back over and over again. So to go back to your question, you know, exploring different things and changing, again, I think it's really a matter of awareness and some back to what we talked about at the beginning before we hit record mastermind groups, people who are, really know you and your vision that they can call you out on your crap and be like, do you know that this year alone you've had 5 different projects and each time this is the one and you haven't finished any of them? Once, twice, maybe I get that. But if this is a reoccurring pattern in your life, let's pay attention. For me right now, I've been trying to ask myself, because my long-term goal is this, and there's a lot of different ways to get there. How is this attached to vision? Right? So this NFT podcast, for example, my long-term vision is one day I'm going to be paid to be a full-time host, and I'm just going to be a host. That's not what I'm doing right now. But Danny, hit me up. 5 years. I'm going to get there.
100%, by the way.
100%. Yep, no doubt. There's so many different ways to get there. And so we're looking for the roadmap. Where's the roadmap? There's no roadmap, Janet. There's no roadmap. So what we have to do is constantly be asking ourselves, how does this get me to that longer-term goal? Starting new podcasts can either, you know, it can distract me from building a bigger audience 100% because I'm making too much content. There's that people. I'm a Gary Vee fan, but there is that. But where I'm distracting myself, or this could be an opportunity to expand my audience. I think how I'm using the measure right now is A, am I enjoying it? B, are the numbers there? So NFT right now, I'm loving it. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm learning. It's expanding my knowledge to make money, and our numbers are really good. So does that help me in my long-term goal? You see what I'm saying here? So that's kind of how I measure things. Dang, this got deep, Danny. You're good at this. You are good at this stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And it's, I appreciate your thoughtfulness and groundedness. You know, you say, oh, I'm ADD or ADHD. I forgot the terminology you used. But to me, from the outside looking in, you just seem like a really grounded, deep thinker, discipline. Which I don't normally.
It's learned. Yeah. It's learned because this isn't my natural state at all.
So how did you go about doing that?
Deep, deep, deep desire to freaking make it. And I know that this is going to, I'm going to have to really focus in and work hard in order to make it and what I want to do, because what I want to do is outlandish and nuts. And statistically, looking on paper, I should probably give it up. But I know through just immersing myself in this world and what people who have made it have said, this is what I need to do is focus in. And so it's kind of gone to the opposite extreme where I have to let myself have fun and enjoy things and let some of the ADD quirky side out, because I think that's where people connect with. They don't connect with robotic. They connect with human. And it's, again, a yin-yang thing, because robotic feels like it gets things done, but human is what pushes us over it. You know what I mean? Imperfectly, Danny.
I don't view. Yeah, no, it's interesting because I view your groundedness not as robotic. I view it as deep and able to think through issues and not going from one place to another and staying true to a vision, right? That those are all things that I think more people would want. So my question to you is, how do you go about going from someone who's ADD or ADHD to more grounded.
Spiritual practice.
Let's go there.
Period. Period.
What does that mean?
Your
exactly?
Sacred time. Your sacred time. What is your sacred time? When do you feel connected to something bigger than you? And there's not a formula to this. There's no explanation for it. I run. I love to run. And I feel God when I run. I do. And I'm probably delusion. I probably need some water. That's probably what's happening. Sure, I feel God because I'm about to pass out. But where do you feel connected to source? No one can tell you that. And are we spending time with it? Because I don't think we were given vision and dreams to be tortured with. I think we were given it because it's in us and we were designed to fulfill it. And yet we try so hard to make things happen. And I'm speaking to myself here, Danny, when we just have to ask ourselves, are we aligned with source? I call it God. Are we aligned with God daily? Are we making that a priority in our life? Because that can redirect any brain and overcome any weakness and fill in any gaps. And the interesting thing, you know, in the Bible, it says that you use your weaknesses to shame the strong. And it uses like what's a defect in you to be your strength. And whether you believe in the Bible or not doesn't matter. That's a powerful statement to hold on to, that your ADD-ness, your hyperactivity, your depression, may I say, your shyness, your whatever that you have thought is keeps you back is the thing that is going to propel you and be your competitive advantage if you let it be.
What's your competitive advantage?
I'm quirky as hell. I'm imperfect, and I'm very comfortable in that. I was talking to a neuroscientist just today, and I'm like, what did you just say? I have no idea what you just said. Can you break that down for me? Like, I have no shame with that. And I think people like that because it kind of makes really non-approachable topics feel a little more digestible. And I think I'm not funny by any means, but I'm humorous, which I think is a little bit refreshing in this space because everybody's trying to be like a bropreneur, you know, like, man, I'm so successful, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And I make fun of those people, and that's fun.
Well, the personality definitely comes through, and it's so apparent, and it just, it's bubbly, and it just, you want to be around people like that. So I appreciate
Thanks.
So I want to talk to you about your goal when you started your podcast. Which one?
Unconventional Leaders?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because when I heard it, I was like, oh my God, I am really meant to be talking to this woman right now in this moment.
Yeah,
because
you are.
When I started that podcast, this podcast, a year ago, I said, you know what? I'm just going to do 100 episodes. And then I'm listening to you on one of these podcasts, and you say, yeah, I just had a 100 episode goal. Where did you pull that from? Why did you make that your goal?
And ignorance, man. If I would have known, like, because you think, oh, 100 episodes, that ain't no big deal. That's a long freaking podcast. You know what I mean? No, I think, I want to say this could be wrong. I want to say that I think I heard Seth Godin, which I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's like one of my favorite people, say that he doesn't even look at like guesting on podcasts until they've hit like 100. And so I think that's maybe where I got that number. But I knew I wanted to get it past the romance stage, right? So We want to get to a point with any creative project that we've allowed enough time to go through where you want to allow space to hate it and to wrestle with it and to struggle with it. I don't know if you're married, Danny, or have a girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, but like the first 5 years of marriage sucks. Like, unless you're a unicorn, like, it's hard, you know?
Why?
Because you get past your cute, I love you, hubby, bubby, boo boo. You get past all that into like, you annoy the hell out of me. And this is hard. It has nothing to do with the person, but that's where you really find out, this is what I want. You know what I mean? And I think with a creative endeavor like podcasting or writing your blog or whatever, whatever, like make it, I think there should be an ending point. Like, let's get to 100 of this or 50 of this or whatever. But make sure that number is big enough to where you know you'll be fighting with your project so you can really know if you love it or not. But I also think, too, give yourself permission to, because as creative people, a lot of times we're like, I'm going to start a podcast and be Joe Rogan and it's going to be fire. And we've never even tried it before in our lives. Then we get into it. We're like, I actually hate this, you know? So like set a goal, like give yourself an out if you want, you know, like that's fine, but make sure it's long enough.
Yeah. And I also think it doesn't have to be about creative pursuits either. It could for sure just be about a new habit or going to the gym or a certain exercise routine. It's like, do it 50 times. See if you like doing that type of exercise. So,
well said. And it will lead you to something, because action creates clarity, 100%. So I started podcasting because I was blogging. Oh my God, I'm a failure. I stopped my blog. No, I didn't. But through my blog, I realized I hated writing. Thank you. I'm glad I wrote a blog. So I realized that I was a better talker. You know what I mean? So go to the gym and try CrossFit. And if you quit it because you hate it, what did it teach you? Did it teach you that you were a swimmer? Did it teach you that you prefer yoga? What did you learn from this? Failure is just data.
You find your voice by using your voice is something you've said before.
I love that. Yes, you find it. What do I say? What do I do? We'll do something. Then you figure it out, you know? Yeah. We're so nervous. Why are we so nervous, Danny? Tell me, what do you think?
I think we're nervous because our friends, and it seems like they're doing great things. They're doing great things. And instead of saying, oh, it's so awesome that Johnny's doing this and Tom's doing that, you say, why am I the one doing that? And we're in our own head too much. Once we get out of our head, once we get aligned with that spiritual practice, you start feeling happy for Johnny and Tom.
Come
and it
on
starts
now
being amazing. It's the truth.
We love you, Johnny. We want Johnny to win.
Exactly. But when you don't have that spiritual practice, when you don't have time to go inward, you start to feel resentful that you're not that person. So I think 100%. We're nervous because we're comparing ourselves to people.
Come on. Yeah, somebody said that the other day. They said something along the lines of, like, you know if you're aligned or not with how you respond to other people's wins.
Yep.
Exactly.
Retweet.
What you said. Come on.
Retweet that. So how did it feel when you were winning? Or I don't know if you were winning. I don't know if you would describe that as that. But you were in the classroom for the first time since fifth or sixth grade when you're just taking developmental classes. And you're winning because you are seeing everyone else who they're not trying. They're playing on their phones. They're not caring. But you start applying yourself and you start winning from that perspective. How'd that feel?
It feels good, because when you realize that, you know, yeah, you can outwork Johnny next to you or whatever. I'm sorry if anybody's name's Johnny and we're picking on you. It feels good because it's empowering, but it's also very frustrating, because you start to realize that when you really do want to make, everybody's like, I want to make a difference in the world. I want to make an impact. I want to blah, 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 which is great. But it makes it more confusing on how to do that, because you realize that other people can't be motivated. You know what I mean? Like the people next to you in the classroom who you befriend, and they're frustrated and they're struggling and they're dealing with this and that or whatever, and they're a single mom and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, you know, here's some things and here's some things and here's some things. And they're just stuck in this negative loop and this mindset where, you know, and dude, I want to be like super empathetic. There's some rough stuff that people have been handed, man. And like, it's not an equal playing ground. There is, I believe, in privilege and like the different starting points for people. So I'm not taking that out of context. But when you're at a point where you have to do something and you just continually choose to not, it gets hard seeing that with people you love. And I'm sure you've experienced this, Danny, as you've leveled up with your mindset and your work, and there's people you deeply love and you're friends with, and you're just like, what the hell? So it's exciting to learn that, but it's also too makes the subject of impact and making a difference more confusing, because you realize that there's something else at work. It's not knowledge, and always it's not always knowledge or this step guide or whatever. There's something deeper at work with people, and there's a deeper spiritual issue going on, I think, that we've got to tap into and figure out as leaders.
What do you mean by that? What do you think the deeper spiritual issue really is?
Well, I think there is a deep disconnect with most people and God. And again, I hate terms right now because I grew up evangelical Christian, like used like boxes and terms and all that. And now that I've grown up a lot and gone through like a lot of deconstruction, I'm very empathetic to language and I don't want to close off anybody who's listening. But the truth is God, universe, whatever. I think there's a big separate and a divide there. And there's a deep wound in most people that needs healing, whether it be through trauma that they've experienced or a lack of love or presence of a father or mother. I mean, like, not to go too deep and heavy, but like there's some really deep rooted stuff in a lot of people's lives that have just kind of been washed over and not tended to. And we've put spirituality and God and connection to love, like in such a systematic format that it's alienated a lot of people. And we're seeing the repercussions of that. And I think that's the rooted issue, that people need to return back to love and source and their belonging in this world, regardless of outcome, that they belong and that they matter. And then I think when you can, you know, to your point earlier, when you see other people winning and you see all this stuff happening, it doesn't threaten you because you are connected to something. And I think our job as leaders is A, being aware of that, that people's success have nothing to do with our guru-ness. We're all wanting to be gurus, and us being a guru is not going to help anybody or save anybody because they don't need another guru. They need to be connected to something greater than them, and that's not us. And we can be a help and an aid, but when we try to become their God and their key to success, we're putting ourselves in a very scary position and not helping them.
Is that something you struggled with in the past, like believing or wanting to be a guru? Or is that something you see other people dealing with, like trying to become a guru?
I don't think I've wanted to become a guru. I think I've had the opposite end of the problem where I don't feel like I'm good enough to help people because I know all my shortcomings. So it's easy for me to point out the guru issue because that hasn't been my struggle. My struggle's been self-confidence and feeling like, what do I know? And feeling intimidated as like a bubbly, hyper Southern woman in a space dominated by very buttoned up men. Right. But yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure to act like an expert in something and not being willing to show the vulnerability and the weakness and the humanness of us all because of the way that our social culture is right now with the online space, which I'm a huge proponent of the online space. I love it. I'm not against it. I think we need to learn how to do it better. And I think Instagram and different places are working on that by taking away some of these metrics that I think are really going to be helpful for us as a society. But we have a long, long way to go.
How have you dealt with that? If you look at the space and you see a space and you see it dominated by men and you feel like, oh, I'm not like this, so can I not succeed? Where does your mind go as a woman who is trying to succeed in a field where you see all men winning, let's say?
You start a podcast. You know, I had a youth leader once tell me, they said, if you see a problem and it bothers you, take that as your sign and your calling, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Because it's easy to be like, oh my God, this is such a problem. This is such a problem. This is such a problem. Well, if it really bothers you, then what are we doing to answer that or to fix it? And so for me, the only thing I knew how to do is try to create a show, a Facebook group, stuff like that, that invited other leaders who didn't look like the traditional stereotype. That's one way. And then also I have to check myself a lot to not just try to recreate masculine energy within myself and just becoming just like the thing that I'm trying to come against And I've really had to check myself on that, because when you're wanting to be accepted in an industry, sometimes you start molding yourself to an industry. And I had noticed myself kind of leaning a little bit more. And I'm not, there's no right or wrong with any of this stuff. It's just like, I set out to be unconventional, and I noticed a lot of my content and stuff was getting very conventional. And I had to really check myself on that. Like, why are you doing this? And it really came down to insecurity. Yeah, insecurity. That's my deal. Danny.
How'd you go about identifying that and then being able to speak about it?
Identifying it and speaking about it. I think these meetings we talked about at the beginning are important. I think having people in your life who call you out on your crap, which I do, and I'm lucky for that. If people are always telling you all the good stuff you're doing, like, really find some people who can really point out the hard stuff. Not assholes, like, get some people who are nice, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, you want that feedback. I think that's how. And also too, just time. I feel like I'm just now starting to come into my voice a little bit more, and I've been doing it for a few years now. I mean, not a horribly long time, but 3-4 years now, consistent hundreds of episodes and hundreds of conversations and stuff. And I feel like I'm just now being like, oh, well, there's some deeper stuff here, Heather, that you've really got to tend to.
And speaking about it, is it something like you identify what you, like, what I mean is, a lot of people would notice that, oh, I'm posting conventional stuff and my name is unconventional, right? A lot of people might notice that, but might not want to speak about it or admit it to the world. Admitting it to yourself is one thing, but admitting it to the world is an entirely different thing. So was there any question for you to put that out there or no?
No, there hasn't been many things that I have felt uncomfortable sharing with my audience about. I genuinely don't care. Like, I don't know why. I feel like it really does help people. I mean, numbers show it. I mean, you can look at downloads and feedback on emails and stuff like that. The more honest you are, the more imperfect you are. I'm not talking about like using your platform as a diary, because that's gross, but using it as a tool to help people who are just like you. You said at the beginning of this, your audience is you. What do you need to hear? And you don't need to hear a whole bunch of fluffy crap. You need to hear like the real stuff. Like, dude, my feelings were super hurt the other day. Like, I pitched this client or whatever. They told me I sucked. I really thought I had nailed this. I got rejected. You know, I mean, like, that kind of stuff, it doesn't make people disrespect you. It makes them feel more appreciative and respect you even more, because they're like, oh, Danny's really real and he cares enough about me that he's willing to let himself be weak and show that side or whatever. So there are things that I keep private, mostly for two reasons. A, if I feel like I haven't really been able to conceptualize myself what's going on or whatever, if I'm still kind of working through something, then I'll put it on the back burner. Interesting concept in psychology. You know, they train therapists this idea of, that's what I went to school for, mental health therapy, of disclosure. And so you share with your audience, you share with your client your issues and what's going on, if it points back to something that they're going through and can help them in their journey. And so you use that as a therapist, as your measure for what you share. And I think that's a really good tool to use as a content creator. If you're weary, should I share this or should I not? Well, does that help your listener with XYZ? And the other reason why I wouldn't share it is if it's attached to someone in my life who I want to respect. Like, I'm married and I'm not going to share everything that's going on with my husband out of respect for him. I want to honor and respect that stuff too. Not that I don't share about marriage, but there's, you know.
Some things are private and should be kept private.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be too happy. I'm like, hey, I announced on the show our fight yesterday. Took a poll and everybody agreed with me. Yeah, he'd love that.
I think there's something beautiful about, you know, we were talking about Gary Vaynerchuk before, how he doesn't show his wife or kids, and that's not part of what he does. Like, as part of him, even though he's a celebrity in many respects, a part of him is private, and I like that. I think that makes... Yeah, I'm a huge Gary Vaynerchuk fan.
That's why we get along, Danny. I love Gary. He's like my favorite.
So why? Why is Gary Vaynerchuk your favorite?
Oh my gosh, I could just cry thinking about it. I've followed him since like the very beginning that I started all this. I want to say it was 2014, maybe. I feel like listening to him has given me permission to be me and has proven that being yourself unlocks things in other people, even if they're different. I could not be any more different than Gary Vaynerchuk. You'll never hear me say the F word. I don't yell at people. I'm very empathetic and all this stuff, but I listen to him daily and people are like, your personalities are so different. Cool. But seeing somebody else lit up and on fire and fully authentic, whether it is like you or not, it sparks something in you. And that's what he's given me. I owe him a lot.
When you first discovered him, I know it was a long time ago, you said 7 years, your first reaction was, this is someone like me, this is someone I want to be around, this is someone who is going to help me? Or was it screw
I loved
this
him
guy?
I loved him, and then my husband hated him. He was like, that guy's such an asshole, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, don't you talk about Uncle Gary that way. You need to listen to this man. And so Brian was like, oh, I can't stand him. He's so arrogant, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And then it was a couple years in, he started listening to Gary, and now he's like homeboys with Gary, and he's like, oh, Gary said this and that. And I'm like, do you remember? Would you just hate that man? So again, it's like, you know, we're so caught up in perception of like, how am I perceived? And I think that's one thing that we've learned through him is people are going to have perception of you no matter if you dress in a suit or wear a bandana or talk Southern or talk British or whatever, whatever. They're all going to have a perception of you, and you cannot get everybody to like you. You might as well be 100% yourself, and you're just going to naturally draw people in and out. And the most important thing, too, is you liking you. Right? That I'm proud of who I am, that I'm proud that I showed up, and it's okay if I'm misunderstood. That's okay. That's nothing to do with me. That's not on me. Dude, there's freedom in that.
You've always struck me as someone, from getting to know you via podcast, it seems like, from my perspective, could be completely wrong, and please correct me if I am, that you always have loved yourself. Is that correct?
Are you joking?
You know, I'll tell you why. You present yourself with a level of self-confidence and authenticity that is like, wow, is this woman, was she born like this? This is crazy. No. So take us through that journey of self-love and how you got to that point, if you are at that point today, or maybe at a stronger point today than...
Dude, I used to hate myself. Like, I remember, like, dude, I had trouble making friends. Like, I literally hated myself. I was in horrible, horrible relationships through high school where, like very abusive situations where I wouldn't even speak up and was dictated what to wear and what to do and where to go. I mean, crazy ass stuff. Like, I was a completely different human being. And it has been just a slow evolution and fierce love of my dear husband and good friends and people who have just fiercely loved me. And I'm lucky. Like, you can find somebody who loves you through all of that. Like, it shows so much about who you want to be. It like calls you up, you know? And if you don't, like connecting with God and really finding a deep love and acceptance for where you're at. I don't know how I could build confidence or build self-acceptance without first experiencing unconditional love from someone else. And again, I'm lucky that I've had that through Brian and through a couple friends. But ultimate source is God, 100%. And I'm completely deconstructed from religion right now, but I'll tell you what, God is real. And like, you can tap into some deep, deep love, and it's unshakable. And the more you start to see how he views you, the more confident you become. And it's not like, I guess growing up in religion, I thought all that self-love stuff and everything was like super evil because you're supposed to be lowly and you're supposed to be, you know, I am nothing, I am weak and all this stuff. And that was a way to like hype God. And I've come completely to the opposite end of that where I'm like, you want to hype God, you want to hype source, like you become like a freaking fireball and reflect all the goodness that is there. And that is how I honor God, is through stepping into that higher self and that higher calling. And it's not that, you know, I'm so great, I'm not afraid of anything. It's like, there's maybe nothing for us to be afraid of, you know? Yeah. And a spiritual practice, dude, that's my answer to like everything you're saying. And I'm sorry if that offends and weirds out people, but I just don't know how to do it another way. I've tried all the free downloadables and crap, and none of that stuff worked for me, you know?
So take me through the first time or one of the first few times that you remember just feeling absolute love from God and how that felt and what that experience was like.
I think whenever you royally screw up and you still feel God's love, like you really just make some big mistakes and you reach really low points, I think that's when you experience God. That's when I've experienced him, and it's not one isolated event. It's just, I don't know, going this path. And I'm assuming everybody's listening to your show is kind of like a achiever type person and has a lot of goals and stuff. It's lonely. Like it is super lonely and isolating because you start kind of pulling yourself away from the pact and people start kind of looking at you cross-eyed and you start making different decisions. And it can be a very lonely place. But also too, like in space, a lot of times that's when God shows up. You know what I mean? And if we're not feeling connection, I know lately I've been really challenged, like in my spiritual practice, like I keep hearing like, make more space, make more space, make more space. And I hate that because I'm a doer and I want to create and execute on stuff. But also too, through that, I haven't allowed something else to step in. And I feel like God's calling me again to a place right now in this season of my life where I need to create space for him. I don't even remember what you asked. I'm so sorry. Like I'm just going down a rabbit hole.
No worries. Why do you think you need to create more space? What do you think God is trying to call to you to do in this next season of your life?
Well, you know, I think there's like this beautiful yin-yang balance of, and I think that's one other thing in the Western religious world we miss is a lot of like kind of the Eastern thoughts of balance. We don't have balance taught here. But I believe in execution hardcore, but I also think there's like this spark of inspiration and creativity that sets things on fire, and we have to have both. And my natural bent is execution. Like, give me a spreadsheet. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to have a good old time today. It's going to get wild in here. But I don't know. With that, it's still not enough. And I think whenever we do everything that we can do, we need to create a space for something else to set in. But sometimes we go on the opposite end where we're creating all this space and we're waiting for something to take the reins. And it's like, no, it's this marriage, you know, do everything that you know how to do, but also to realize that you're part of the recipe. You're not the whole recipe, you know? So I think it's a dependency thing that God wants like it to be a marriage and a relationship. And I think he likes playing with us. I think he's like, ha, you thought you were all that. Watch this. You know what I mean? He's got jokes.
Yeah. So take me to a place where you were, did you need space at the time when you graduate therapy school, I believe it was, and or mental health school, and you say, I don't want to do this. I don't want to get a job because mm-hmm. I can't go to the office at 8 a.m. That's just not me. Mm-hmm. And you break down and you're crying to your husband mm-hmm. or boyfriend, I believe it was. And did you need space at that time? Did space come in? Did you need to execute at that time? Take me back.
Sure. So what you're referring to is after I graduated with my degree and got my license, got a couple of job offers because I was going to be a therapist. It just felt really wrong. It felt so, so wrong. And people are always like, how do I know? I'm like, get really still. Like, trust that instant yes or no. But what's frustrating and hard about that is sometimes that yes or no just genuinely doesn't make sense. And so it's like your gut versus your head. And that's when good people in your life are so important, because they're like, go with your gut, go with your gut. Good people are always going to tell you to go with your gut. And yeah, I ended up turning it down, and there was a lot of space. I mean, I literally turned down good income, killer job, like perfect. I could have made my own schedule and make a salary that was great. I mean, like, it was stupid of me to like turn that down, and I knew it, but it just felt wrong. But, I'll tell you a quick analogy with that is when I was in, when I was like 18, 19 years old, I remember I was at a university, a school, whatever, and I didn't have any money for clothes and like new clothes. I needed some new clothes. Like, I was wearing some really crappy stuff, and I think I was gaining weight and getting chunky and needed more clothes or something. I don't know. And I was like, God, I don't have any money for new clothes. And I heard him say, go clear your closet. Like, go clear everything in your closet. So I got a big black trash bag, and I put all my clothes except for what I was wearing in this bag. And I went and I gave it to somebody, and I had no clothes. So I went from like, I need new clothes to I have no clothes. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. God, thank you. Appreciate you. Appreciate your wisdom. No, it was terrible. And later that day, I think it was that evening, it wasn't 24 hours, somebody called me and said, hey, the university down the road, there are all these like really rich, gorgeous girls who like grew up millionaires or something. I don't know. It was like this really preppy college, not the college I was at. And you're like, they're literally throwing bags of clothes out into the hallway because they're all moving and graduating. Go down there. And so I went down there, and there was just these hallways full of like designer clothes with tags still on them. And I was like 18, 19 years old. I came back with like 9 bags full of like brand new gorgeous clothes. And I just heard like God to me say to me, you know, like, when you want something, you've got to make space for it. Like, you're begging and you're asking for something new. Do you have enough faith to create space for it? And so a lot of times we're like, God, give me more money, give me more clients, give me more this, give me more that. Do we have the bandwidth and the space to add, to accept what we're asking for, right?
Such a great point. And it made me think about, for the first time ever, I realized that in order to receive, you first need to give.
Come on.
And that is such an important lesson. And even when you think you can give nothing, you can give a smile, you can give your time. It's like, and from that, you are creating space so that you can then receive. And that was just like mind-blowing emoji for me personally, because never really thought about that like that. So thank you, Heather.
Well, an interesting thing to think too is to ask what can I give right now? Because, you know, sometimes I don't know what to give. So if like you're believing for something like, man, I really want this podcast to explode or whatever. What can I give right now? What can I do? You know what I mean? And it might not be like a physical thing. It might be like, hey, reach out to Sophie and offer to mentor her right now. She really needs somebody or whatever. There might be an energetic exchange, but there'll be something you can give.
Wow. I'm just so fascinated by your example. Are there any other examples that stick out in your mind when you gave something and it created space for you then to receive?
I don't know about space, but I use the mentorship example. One of my very first businesses was photography. I was a photographer for years, and I remember being broke as a joke. I had so many broke as a joke examples. I was early 20s. I was 20, 21. I don't know. And I really needed a new camera for my business, but I had no way to buy this camera. I think it was only like $1,500. Like, it was a cheap camera back in the day or whatever. And I remember asking God, you know, oh, I really need a new camera, blah blah blah, and I didn't have anything to give. I didn't sound like I could give my old camera. I didn't have anything. So I remember him saying to reach out to somebody who needed to learn how to do photography. Like, they had mentioned it to me before, and just offer to like mentor them and help them with their business and stuff. And I did. and it wasn't a few months later, my grandfather had passed away, and he wasn't rich or anything or didn't have a lot to leave behind, but I remember getting a check in the mail that he had left me $1,500. Oh my God. And yeah, it was like exactly the amount. I'm not saying like God killed my grandpa or anything. It wasn't like that. It's terrible. Not any means, you know, but I don't think it's coincidence. I don't think it's coincidence. I needed $1,500. And then my grandfather, that's what he left me for my camera. But I also think too, that energetic exchange of just like reaching out and teaching and mentoring somebody, that's what God asked of me. And you can say it's coincidence all day long, but my life's full of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, mine too. What would you say to someone who just tells you, I don't believe in God?
That's okay. You don't have to.
Yeah.
I think that is the biggest issue with, and I know nothing about your spiritual belief standing, so I hope I don't offend you with anything that I say, but I think that's the biggest issue with Christianity and a lot of religions is we need to get you to do something. And what ends up happening is we end up cognitively convincing people of things that they should do, and they get into a spiritual place where they need to rely on what they've been told to believe, and they find out that it's an empty well. And there's nothing there, and they fall back. And they're like, see, God wasn't real. When it wasn't that God wasn't real, it's that they followed a formula and followed the cognitive path to find spirituality as opposed to experiencing something for themselves. And so I think it's good intent that a lot of spiritual people are trying to convince people logically. But I think the best thing we can do for people who may be listening who say, I don't believe in God, is that's cool. Like, you don't have to. If there's a desire to explore something, follow your curiosity and follow your nudge. And if something's there, it'll show itself to you.
I like that. That's a really interesting, good way to approach it. And also, the
same
way.
It makes a lot of Christians mad.
It does. Why? Because.
For sure. Because yeah. Of, you know, we need to get people saved. And I don't think we can get anybody saved. We can't get anybody to do anything. Nor should we. You know what I mean? Like, we can't put ourselves the position of that authority when we're here to be carriers of something. And that's it.
It goes back to what we were talking about before about being a guru and
exactly.
And trying to convince someone that this is the way or this is the path assumes you know everything there is to know, whereas you can just live how you're going to live and use that as an example. And if someone says, oh, that's interesting. Why is she full of love? Why is she full of light? What is going on here?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll explore more. Maybe they'll go deeper. Maybe they'll say, what is Heather doing to get that energy out to the world? Because I'm sure has there been people who have come to you and noticed a huge difference in your personality from when you didn't love yourself to, let's say, now you do, full of energy and full of light?
100%. And a lot of misconception, too, to your point of like, oh, it must be nice to be so confident. You know what I mean? And you're just like, dude, this is like a hardcore work in progress. You know what I mean? And so, but the spiritual component, like, I hope is evident and I hope comes up naturally as opposed to it being in an agenda.
Yeah. It's a much different way to approach. I want to talk to you about Alfred Adler. I know he's one of your favorite psychologists and researchers. What did you learn from Alfred Adler and why did he play such a significant role in your thinking or your life?
Sure. So when you study psychology, you go back to a lot of the theorists of like, why are we the way that we are? And so a lot of therapists and so forth kind of have a therapeutic approach, which isn't just something they pull out of their butt. It's something usually based off of some of these main core theories that have been around for a very long time, which probably need to be revisited, but that's another topic. But a lot of more of these like kind of older dudes back in the 30s or 40s who kind of sat around and smoked pipes and like, for like, why are we all so screwed up? And a lot of them were like Freud. People know Freud. And one of them was Alfred Adler. And I kind of stuck to his theory when I was in school. I really liked it, probably because it spoke to me and was what I was dealing with. You know, we all think life is based off through our own perception and experience, but he taught that we're all born with a sense of inferiority. And this inferiority could be at a physical inferiority, emotional, spiritual, or whatever, but there's this thing that we think is wrong with us, right? And so we spend the rest of our life trying to overcompensate for that in a variety of different ways. So if your dad didn't hug you or tell you that you were a good man, you might work really hard the rest of your life to be an alpha or to dominate or whatever. Maybe I grew up poor, and so I have this really bad issue with money, which can make me overcompensate to overspend or act like I have more money than I do and put me in a really bad position. And so a lot of these dysfunctional behaviors stem from these core wounds and these, quote, inadequacies that we feel like we have. And so his thought, and the reason that I really liked him, first of all, was like, I think that's true. I think we all got some issues. But what I really loved is his solution to this was not that we fix any of it. It's that we steer it towards societal good. And so in essence, we use our pain and our dysfunction to leverage our messages and our work to help others. And that's why I loved him so much. So you, and I have no idea, you know, your issue with your father, your hypothetical issue with your father, you could use to really connect with other men and change culture. My issue with money could be used to make a lot of money for good and help people in poor communities. So I thought it was a very empowering approach without taking away the reality of pain.
And is that something you think about on a daily basis, on a weekly basis?
No, but not
at all. It's just in your subconscious, like.
Yeah. I mean, I think when, you know, through conversations like this, or you know, some of the my own deeper work when I'm really working through something, you know, I think I reference it and think about my own inadequacies and my own fears. I think it's a good reference point. If I were doing therapy right now, then it would probably be a part of my approach. But it's not right now.
How different were, I assume you do some therapy in therapy school with helping patients. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
So how different is doing an interview and helping patients with therapy?
Oh, well, I mean, it's there's a lot of similarities and obviously a lot of differences. I mean, there's not like an objective in most interviews of like getting to the root of any kind of problem. And usually people who you're interview want to be positioned as like in a favorable light and not start crying. So there's that piece. But I think from an interviewing perspective, it's been a real help to me to have that skill set because and I'm still working on it, but really getting to a point where I can ask what I really want to know and be okay with not knowing something and be okay, to your point earlier, about being perceived maybe as unfavorable. And I think really good interviewers are okay with being in the position of a student and allowing curiosity to kind of take the lead as opposed to thinking, what should I ask? And really being comfortable saying, what do I really want to know? And also being comfortable enough, and you've done a great job of this, Stanny, of like really prying in and asking a stranger very personal questions. And we've been taught, at least in Western culture, you know, like be polite, sit up straight, don't, you know, make the other person sweat too much. And here is an interview where you're like, hello, my name is Danny. You know, tell me your deepest, darkest fear in life. You know what I mean?
By the way, like, it'll be recorded forever and
exactly, published in perpetuity. Your grandchildren and the legacy and all that stuff you were saying earlier, like making me nervous. Like that gets to a point where you have to be super comfortable in your own skin. And I think being taught, you know, how to do therapy helped with that. And also, too, I'll say really respecting and understanding and validating the experience of another. I grew up in Southern Bible Belt, Christian, blah, blah, whatever. And that's a very narrow worldview. And luckily, through therapy and through working with so many different people, I've understood that I know such a small, tiny fraction of this world, and what I believe and what I think very well could be wrong. Right?
Yeah. What about the internet? With the internet.
What about the internet?
That's a great question. What about question, the internet? Right? So, with the internet, you learn so much about other people. You talk about your narrow worldview, or your worldview, mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd consider it narrow, getting shook by all this, the therapy and talking to people. But the internet, was that a huge, whoa, other people think differently for you personally?
I think at the beginning, yeah, but I think we're at a point now where algorithms are at a point where it's showing us what we believe and think and all of that. So you're like, oh, the whole world agrees with me. No, these platforms are smart. So I think at the beginning it had that potential. And unless you're deliberate now, I think that it just really reinforces your own worldview.
Do you try to be deliberate about following different viewpoints on online?
Not as much as I should. Not as much as I should. I have really, this is my next personal growth venture. But man, this year, dude, like the lack of empathy and hatred, and it's, I've got to work on myself, because I've hidden and blocked and a bunch of people. And I don't know, it's this weird line where it's like I want to be open and learning from other people, but also too, like, there's like this moral ground where it's tricky, dude. Like, we're the first people ever to go through this and to figure out what it means to be a human online, and I do not have it figured out. But the answer to your question, no, I don't, and I should.
How do you go about teaching your children how to use the internet?
These questions, I'm sweating. Oh, that is so hard. It's so hard. My daughter wants to start creating content, and she's 8, and there's two sides. Yeah, there's two, because she sees, like, me and her dad, like, that's what we do, you know. And it's two sides. I'm like, A, what a cool skill set to learn. Like, we can get you in a business and go ahead and get your platform going, you know what I mean, like CEO. But also too, I'm like, dude, you're 8, and I would never have wanted what I thought, you know, like you were saying, what we say is forever. And thank God I'm in my 30s. So I feel like a little more grounded to say things that I'll probably be embarrassed about, but it won't be detrimental. Give me a mic when I'm 14. Dude, that's so, you know what I mean? So there's that. And there's also too, like, just people. I've noticed she says things a lot, like, how many views did that get? And that really just, I know that's an exciting thing, but I'm also too, like, wow, you're 8 years old, and the first thing you think when I post something is, how many views did it get? Like, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why that matters. Let's talk about why that's the first thing, you know? So it's messy, dude. I don't know. We haven't let her put out anything on the internet yet. Like, we just don't know what to do. We don't hide anything that we do online with our kids. They see every single thing. And I think that's helpful, because they're kind of watching. But it's also scary, because we don't know.
How do you have that conversation when your daughter says, how many views did that get? And you say, what exactly? How do you talk through that?
I talk to her a lot about how she feels about things. Like, I share with her, you know, because, like, usually it's on TikTok, because we were big on TikTok. We're a big TikTok family. And so if I put up a TikTok video, she'll say, oh, how many views did it get? And I'll be like, well, let's talk about whether we liked the video or not. So we talk about, well, I really liked the video because of this or this, or if I didn't like the video because of that, and then whether she liked it or not. So we're using, like, our own feeling as the metric, and then talk about how many views it got. Like, if it, like, some videos she'll be like, oh, it only got this many views. And I'm like, yeah, but I really enjoyed making that. That was a lot of fun, and I'm happy with it. So trying to attach that as a really important metric, not just the views. There's that element. And also, too, just explained to her that just because people view it doesn't mean that there is a response there, that views aren't the only response. You know what I mean? Like, something can get a lot of views, but that doesn't mean that it hit home with anybody. Right? So there's a level of impact as a measure, like how many people commented and interacted and then commented something meaningful. Was there an engagement with that? And so understanding that as a metric, not just views.
I heard recently, and it might have been from one of your podcasts, that, you know, how many times does someone say, because of your Twitter or Instagram account, that changed my life? But how many times of a podcast will a conversation strike someone and say, wow, that really moved me in a deep way? Meaning, like, the form of podcast is so much of a deeper connection. And it goes along with what you're talking about with your daughter. Like, how does it move someone? How does it, right, how does it really make them feel? It's not just about how many people saw it, but how many people were moved by it.
Makes for a big sure difference. 100%. 100%. Dude, I don't know if anybody's listening and you have a book on this topic, like, DM me, because I need to learn. Like, I don't know. And there's no, you know.
What do you need to learn?
I don't know. I don't ever want to block my kids from expressing themselves and being equipped to handle a digital world, because that's what they're going to live through. And then also, guiding them emotionally to be good people and not robotic. And it's hard. So every question you ask about this, I'm going to be like, I don't know, Danny, like, we're trying to figure this out. I know that for me personally, I want my girls to enter in the online space through their own will, as opposed to mine. And this is just for me. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong. I do post about my kids every once in a while because I just think they're the cutest and I want to show their face. But I'm very hesitant and I do that very little. And I've gotten crap about that from other people because they're like, do you not want to show us your kids? Are you not proud of your kids? Blah, blah. It has, like, nothing to do with that. But also, I don't want to view them as a prop. You know what I mean? And me just create a narrative online about their lives that they haven't been a part of. Right? Because I'm the writer, I'm the content creator, and I'm showing the world who they are, as opposed to letting them do it themselves one day. So that's where I'm at right now with it, and I might change.
And how old are your kids, if you don't mind me asking? Just so,
sure,
for context.
They're 8 and 4.
8 and 4. Yeah. It's going to be really fascinating to see you develop with this idea as they go through middle school, high school.
Oh my God, I'm stressing out already.
If they go down that route, because it's like the relationships between friends and what age do they get the phone? Mm-hmm. Do they get to be on these platforms? I mean, I just thank God I'm personally not a parent at this time, but something tells me that if and when I do have children, it's only going to be harder than it is today. So it's a very difficult topic, and I feel for you very deeply.
Thanks.
Before we go to a close, I want to ask you about a question I ask everyone, but I really, really curious about your answer, because I view you as such an empathetic, real, authentic human being. And that is, what advice do you have for someone pursuing the highest version of themselves, whether that's mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever it may be?
What advice do I have for someone who's pursuing the highest version of themselves? Wow. I would say pursuing joy is a worthwhile pursuit. Pursuing what lights you up, pursuing what makes you happy, to not feel guilty about enjoying your life and laughing and being a little loose with things. Because I know if anyone's asking the question, how do I pursue the highest version of myself? You're probably like me and you're pretty ambitious. And we need to hear that. You don't ask that question unless you have that little bit of personality. And it's so interesting the irony of how we work so hard to get to a point where God just wants us to get very childlike. And it makes no sense.
Why do you think it makes no sense?
Because we think that we can build a kingdom. And he says it's already here.
And what a beautiful place to go to a close, Heather. I enjoyed this so much. I got chills throughout this podcast. I'm so grateful for you.
You're so good at this. You're so good. You're in your lane. You're doing exactly what you're called to do because I don't even know you, and I feel like so comfortable. So, Danny, congrats to following your own calling because you're in it, dude.
Thank you. Where can people find you? Let them know where they should direct the messages saying how much they enjoyed this podcast because they made it to this point.
Oh, yeah. It's at Heather Parody everywhere, heatherparody.com, most social platforms, Heather Parody.
Awesome. Thank you. Follow this woman. This was an incredible conversation. I'm really grateful for it.
Thank you.
Heather Parody, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, what a wonderful, wonderful woman. So grateful to have spent that hour and 15 minutes with her. And I'm incredibly grateful you decided to spend the last hour and 15 minutes with me and Heather. And so just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'm extremely, extremely grateful for you for listening until the closing moments. Thank you as always. And if you want to connect with me further, at Hey Danny Miranda on Twitter, Instagram, and now even TikTok. Thank you for listening. It means the world. And I will see you in the next episode. Peace.